powerful is the Cox Network. So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With multi-gig speeds now available, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. Limited availability in select areas. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
You're listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Here are your hosts, Bucky Brooks and Rhett Lewis.
We are nearly at the finish line. It is crunch time. Actually, most of the work is probably already done for Tom Telesco, Antonio Pierce and company as we get set. Final NFL Raiders Draft Podcast before draft week. Welcome, everybody. Great to be back here with you. Rhett Lewis and Bucky Brooks back for another round here, talking draft, talking Raiders, talking pick 13, and today, beyond. Little teaser, got a seven-round mock draft coming to Raiders.com here soon. But anything seven-round, Buck, is a labor of love. You know what I mean?
It is a labor of love for you to go through all the names, to have done the evaluations, to then play matchmaker. Like, that is something that you only can do it if you love it, and you obviously love it when it comes to connecting the dots for the silver and black.
Well, we're going to do that. We're going to talk about some of the potential picks that we're eyeing in the seven-round mock. But the greatest thing about doing a seven-round mock for one team is that you don't have to worry about the other picks.
you can pick your favorite players. Here's a dream draft. I get to pick the seven that I want on my favorite team. Here we go. And I don't have to worry about what everyone else is doing. I like it. What a deal.
Look,
what it does do, it gives you some perspective on what could be available throughout the course of the draft. And one of the difficult things now, as we're in mock draft season, we only talk about the first round. And so you're just so comfortable with the names that are in the first round that, I mean, if you didn't pay attention, you wouldn't think that there was anything beyond the first round. So this gives us an opportunity to talk about some of the guys that are really good players who might be picked outside of the first round.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously what happens at 13 plays a big role in how the rest of the draft is going to shape, especially if you consider quarterback an option. So we'll get into all that here. And I think that this will be a worthy exercise. So again, the full piece is going to come out next week, but we'll run through some of those scenarios in this episode. But today we got to begin with how Antonio Pierce, Raiders now first year head coach, addressed the team, welcoming them back officially for the start of the offseason program. And it could really be summed up with two words: be better. And it is a complex formula, but it is a simple mantra. And so I'd love to get your take, Buck, on how you kind of see that phrasing permeating, not only through the organization and through the locker room, but through the draft, right? On April 25th, going all the way through the 27th.
Yeah, no, I think it's simple. I think it's something that was well thought out. It was something that he'd been kind of wrestling with for a long time, because whenever you're a coach and you're thinking about what can I leave with the team during that first meeting, and get better is something that everyone can do, because it's something that is like Nick Saban, when he was with Alabama, he always talked about the process, right? The process being a thing where you're working towards a goal, but you don't keep tabs on the result. You just keep working on your trade, keep working on your craft, and at the end of the road, just look at the scoreboard, and whatever happens, happens. I think get better is one of those things. It's not a quantifiable thing, but it's something that we're going to keep putting the work in. We can get better each and every day, and whatever it looks like at the end of the year, that's what it looks like. I think when he cited not only the players, but he cited himself personally in terms of surrounding himself with Marvin Lewis and Joe Philbin and being able to challenge himself every day to be the best head coach it can be. Because one of the things that we have to think about is this is his first year on the job. Last year, he took over the team in the middle of the year. So he didn't really fully get a chance to establish who he is and what he's about, put together the core principles of his program, talk about it from day one, hold people accountable to meeting that from the jump. Now he gets an opportunity to do it. He also gets the opportunity to do it with his own coaches. He will have his own players. This is AP's team. And it's really important that he sends the message that on my team, here's what the expectations are. The expectations are you're going to come to work every day. You can put in a hard day's work. You can get better. You can focus on mastering the little things. And if we just continue to get better each day, at the end of the year, we're going to be really proud of the progress that we made as a team.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was super cool. You know, like went through the position groups. Hey, D-line room, get better, right? QBs, get better. Wide receiver core, get better. And then, you know, as you mentioned, brought up Joe Philbin, brought up Marvin Lewis. Hey, AP, get better. We need to be better, right, as a Raiders organization. And so I think that that phrase is one to really kind of hang on. Like, it's so simple to think about in the framework of, all right, if I'm an individual player on this team, at the end of this day, it's so simple to say, did I get better today?
Yeah.
Or were there ways in which I could have done something more to achieve that goal? It is an attainable daily goal that leads to a season long goal. Right. And I think that's, that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. I think it's an interesting way to kind of look at the draft too, right? Because we talk about best player available, right? And that is essentially the get better piece of best player available and of draft philosophy. Now, the thing that I kind of continue to come back on, and it's another piece I wrote that's out on Raiders.com this week, is the ways in which the Raiders can go get a quarterback if that's something that they feel the need to do. And that's something that, look, only Tom Telesco and Antonio Pierce and the whole, you know, evaluation crew really know right now. So the way that I see that they could, you know, work to get better, right, at that position group is, you know, one, go trade up to get Jaden Daniels. But man, it sure feels like that's going to be tough based off the conversations that I know we're all hearing that, man, the Commanders are keeping two, Patriots are keeping three, quarterbacks are going 1, 2, and 3. Right. I mean, like, I haven't heard anything different on that front. Have you?
No, I think that would be the expectation. And unless something wild happens in the next few days, those quarterbacks are going to come off the board in that particular order.
Yeah. And look, nobody's trading for the number three pick before the draft, right? Because you don't really know what the Commanders are doing at two. So that's why I don't think we're going to see any movement, you know, until the Bears are on the clock, right? At number one. So that seems a little far-fetched at this point based off the price you're going to have to pay to go get a quarterback, even if you love him. And then the question becomes, all right, the stick and pick model is at 13. Is J.J. McCarthy there? Probably not. Is Bo Nix there? Maybe. Is Michael Penix there? Possibly. So do you love one of those quarterbacks enough, even if it's the sixth one off the board at that point, to make him the future of your franchise, Bucky, and to make you better at the QB spot? Like, that's the answer that you have to come up with.
And that's the answer. And that's what all these meetings have been for leading up to the draft. How good do you feel about what we call the next tier? So let's break it up in tiers. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, they're one tier. J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, Michael Penix are in another tier. How good do you feel about that second tier compared to the quarterbacks that you currently have on the roster? How do you feel about that, the potential, the ceiling of the tier two group in comparison with Pat Mahomes and those guys? Like, this is one where you're trying to figure out, how can we win the division? Then how can we get into the postseason? And when you get into the postseason in the AFC, now you begin to talk about the likes of Josh Allen. You're talking about Lamar Jackson. I mean, you're talking about Joe Burrow and some of the other great Tua Tagovailoa, some of the other great quarterbacks that are in this conference. Do you have the ability to bring a big time player to the party to give yourself a chance to win? We always talk about it. Are you going to the gunfight with a butter knife? Or are you going equally loaded? You want to make sure that you're going loaded for bear so you can hold your own. And that's what the Raiders have to assess. And that's what they have to think about doing going forward.
And I think, you know, one of the scenarios, again, involved in getting a quarterback that folks are probably, you know, some folks are thinking when it comes to the Raiders at 13, it's like, well, 13 is too high for Bo Nix or for Michael Penix. Trade back, accumulate, get more picks, and then take the quarterback. Well, that's a risky proposition if you are hanging your hat on getting a quarterback, right? Because what, you know, six spots at that point might net you, you know, say you move back six spots, that might net you, you know, maybe a third round pick, maybe it's a pick swap, third to fourth, you know, some sort of, like, is that worth potentially missing on the QB? So, like, I think if you are really considering, hey, we're ready to take this guy, whether it's at pick 13 or pick 33, then just take him at 13, because it's a quarterback. And if you love him enough, and if you're convicted enough that he's going to beat your franchise, why mess around with it? Right.
Yeah, I'm a believer in that. Don't mess around. A lot of times people worry about trying to get cute, moving around the board. Oh, let me get an extra seventh round pick and those things. My thing is, you have an opportunity to get the player. You want to stick around and get the player and fully maximize everything. If you start bouncing around and doing all that, the last thing you want to do is trade back. Then you get to a spot, the guy's right ahead of you and the guy in front of you takes your pick. Bam. That's miserable because now you're just out of it. You could have done it. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the outsiders think. Ultimately, you'll be judged on how they perform. So pick the guys that you believe in.
And look, I mean, you've definitely got to be paying close attention to the smoke signals that are coming out of, you know, Denver right now, sitting one pick ahead of you, desperate need for a quarterback at 12. Whereas I don't think the Raiders need it for a quarterback is dire. You know, they won with Aiden O'Connell last year, 500 team with Aiden O'Connell last year. Obviously, you'd like to be better. But again, he was a rookie. Gardner Minshew was a, you know, a fourth down drop away from going to the postseason with the Colts after stepping in from, you know, for Anthony Richardson. So those two guys can compete to win games for this Raiders franchise. So I don't think you have to go nuts, you know, if you don't really, you know, feel convicted that way. So, you know, could you see maybe a more measured move up to 10 or to 9? Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, a more measured thing, but you don't want to go crazy because you also have other needs to fill. We talk about this is an offensive line that only has like two guys signed on the contract beyond this year. So as much as everyone around the Raiders will talk about the quarterback, you still got to build a team. And this team is going to be expected to compete. And given the money that was doled out to Christian Wilkins, I would say that the expectations of the Raiders is they're competing hard to go get them. Talk about having a blueprint to be able to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. You feel like you can wreck the Chargers whenever possible, given the recent success against them. This is one where I don't think they want to skip a beat. That's why I'm not all the way convinced that quarterback is a given for this team early in the draft.
Sure. And then, you know, you could be looking at a, you know, maybe a Bo Nix or, you know, again, a Spencer Rattler later down the road. But again, that's basically what you did last year with Aiden O'Connell in the fourth round. So,
So that also becomes the conversation. How do they view Aiden O'Connell versus the tier two quarterbacks? Do they believe it's comparable? If it's comparable, then why move on? So there's always this scrimmage that exists, scouts and personnel looking at different lanes and different avenues and comparing and contrasting the players.
The last scenario that I'll point to, and it's one that we talk about a lot because it's got a little nuance to it. It makes some sense on the surface, but we just don't see it very often, is the idea that, all right, at 13, you know, we're somewhere between like and love on the second tier of the quarterbacks. If we love, we take them. But if we're, you know, just not 100% on it, we take the best player available, which is, you know, let's say it's Troy Fautanu from Washington, the offensive lineman. Then, you know, we're waiting around. We're seeing how the first round unfolds. We're into, you know, let's say we're at 23 or 24, and we're like, holy smokes, guys, Michael Penix is still there. Let's try to come back in to the back end of the first round. You know, in the process, you pick up, you know, the fifth year option, which is attractive. But really, the last time we see a team do that was Ozzy and the Ravens with Lamar. Like, we talk about it all the time now. We just don't see it very often.
No, because I don't think people are – I believe guys are scared. They're not convicted. Yeah. They're unwilling to go out on their own for the player that they believe in. And this should be a situation where if you believe in the player, you go get the player. If Michael Penix is a guy that the Raiders can envision being the quarterback for them, they should make the move to make it happen. Unless all of that is like pomp and circumstance and you're just saying it but you don't believe it. But if he is there nearing the bottom of the first round, somebody who likes and who has a system that works with that kind of quarterback should be willing to make a deal.
So there you go. Those are the ways in which a quarterback comes to the Raiders somewhere in the first 32 picks. Those are the options. Again, check out that piece, Raiders.com, right now, all the scenarios in which Tom Telesco and the Raiders could find a way to get a QB. Okay. let's get into this. Like, let's get into some of the scenarios here. And I think baseline, because I think you and I both believe that Michael Penix is the fourth quarterback in this draft, fourth best. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I believe he's the best pure passer. Now, you got to take everything into that, right, into his profile, you know, and that's why I think he ends up, you know, in my book as the fourth, you know, injuries and all that. So let's say the Raiders pick him at 13. Now let's see how the draft strategy might unfold rounds 2 through 7, because as we've identified potential needs, and again, you know, we're not in the future planning, you know, meetings here. So we don't know how they see the potential ways to improve certain positions, but we can certainly make informed, you know, decisions here on our own. And that is offensive line. If you're going to take a quarterback at 13, let's continue to protect him. Right. Yeah. So names, you know, in the second round at pick 44, who you could be looking at there, is Jordan Morgan from Arizona still available? Is it too high for Kingsley Sumataya from BYU, who's a guy? You know, I think Mason McCormick is an interesting one to think about there, a guy we saw from South Dakota State at the Shrine Bowl, had a nice combine. You know, there are some other names that I think, you know, the interior guys will start to come off the board. Is Zach Frazier available? You know, a really good player, might be a first rounder. So, you know, in my mind here, round two, if you get a quarterback in round one, round two comes down to, all right, do we have higher grades on the O-linemen or higher grades on the DBs?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And so what you're referencing is the horizontal board. So I want everyone to close their eyes and imagine you're looking ahead at the front of the classroom. And on the left, you have what we call the vertical board. That is, you rank your top 125 prospects, regardless of position. Hey, I like this guy one, this guy two, this guy three, all the way down to 150. The grade populates. Then you have the horizontal board, which is all of the grades and the prospects by position. So all the quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, tight end twos, centers, stuff like that, going all the way across the board. And sometimes you have guys who have close grades and on the magnet, the overall, they're touching. Yeah. So you're trying to figure out, well, which one would I want to go to? And so that's always debate. It's a big debate in how we're, what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the way I think that I might scrimmage it out is I think the value, again, because you might have 9 offensive linemen go in the first round. Could. And then, you know, I bet there's a pretty strong play to get the 10th guy, because I think you could see, again, a little bit of a drop off there. So let's say that Morgan's off the board. I think a guy like TJ Tampa, from Iowa State in the second round might be interesting, or a player like Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota, ball hawk and safety, to come back there and help out as well. Like, I think of those types of players at pick 44 that could be in play.
Yeah, I think they could very well be in play. And of the two, like you talk about Tyler Newbin and what he brings, terrific ball hawk, center fielder player, great range, great ball, I would say awareness in terms of like just being able to get it, to have the range, to anticipate throws, key diagnose, and go get it. He is a C ball, get ball defender. When you just think about what this defense needs and who they're facing, the quarterbacks, and Justin Herbert wants to push the ball down the field. Pat Mahomes certainly has that in the game when he has capable receivers. I would not be mad about that part of it, having an elite ball snatcher in the middle of the field, and he is elite.
Yeah. Yeah, and then TJ Tampa is just a long levered corner at 6'2", and, you know, a little over 200 pounds. I think he was, in my book, arguably the best cornerback in the Big 12 this year at Iowa State. You know, played against some pretty dang good offenses. And I think he acquitted himself very well. He's got some speed, too. So he's got the athletic profile. So I look at TJ Tampa, you know, if you want an outside corner, in that spot there in the second round. So then let's say you end up going DB there in the second round. So who's available to you, you know, offensive line wise, maybe in the third round? I think that's where a guy like Mason McCormick could come along. I think really turn some heads at the East-West Shrine Bowl. I'm kind of leaning that direction to go O-line in the third round right there. I think that's a good value. I think you could also see a player, you know, maybe it's a little early for a Christian Mahogany It's kind of an interior mauler brawler type from Boston College. Maybe more of a fourth rounder there, but I think anywhere in there you could see it. So I think the third round you could start to see some good value build for offensive linemen, you know, outside of that first round conversation.
Yeah, no, I think the key to nailing your late round picks is knowing who you are as an organization, what you believe in, what are the core values, the intangibles, and then matching it up with players who also exhibit those intangibles, those traits, like those guys that are more willing to fit not only the scheme, but the profile of the team. And then they must have a superpower. If you're someone who has played at a small school, but you are clocking 4.3s, well, on tape, I need to see you run fast and blow by people. I need to see that it's relevant. If you're someone who sits back and you're going to bench press 350 pounds, you're going to do like 225 a million times.
Yeah.
But I don't see the functional strength and I can't bring you in. I just want to make sure that you have a trait, a tool that separates you from others. Because if you have that, I can figure out a role for you to find a way to be a contributor.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one, you know, for sure. So I like that idea to go get an offensive lineman there if you haven't already done so, you know, in the third round, if the value matches your board and if the, you know, you're comfortable with the players in that range. I think fourth round, and again, you know, I look at a guy, this is a potential spot where the running backs really start to fly off the board, you know, pick 112, you know. Third round. Remember, we were just listening to Eric Costa, who just flat out said it. Like, we're going to start, the running backs are going to fly off the board in the third round. I'm like, all right, we'll take a note of that. Right. And so I'm thinking maybe fourth round, you know, you might get to that fifth, sixth running back, maybe even the seventh running back at that point. You know, and I think at that point, you're starting to look at guys like Ray Davis from Kentucky. You could start to look at guys like, you know, if you want that big bruiser, Audric Estime from Notre Dame. Maybe Jalen Wright from Tennessee is in the mix, you know, there. Imani Bailey from TCU. I think that value might really jive at 112 to pick up a running back to complement a guy like Zamir White.
Yeah, I think so. And I also love what you did. Like, you brought in a bigger back. Like, Austin Estime is a bigger bruiser, a banger who does all the dirty work in between the tackles, you know. It's one of those things that when you're building your kind of back by committee situation,
sure,
you're super on it about like making sure everything is lined up and goes according to plan. I think for the Raiders, you have your initial plan. You say that I want to make sure that I have a back that can complement what I have in Zamir White. But hey, do you want a big back? Do you want a big back that has speed? Do you want a big back that can catch the ball out the backfield? Those things will ultimately decide if that's a pick. Estimate. Solid running back, physicality, toughness. He kind of fits the profile of what AP has said he wants his team to be.
And improved his 40 time from the combine, where it was, you know, a little up there at 4.7.
To it'd be right tough now. I'll be honest with you. If the late Al Davis was dead, that'd be hard to get him in. That'd be a hard one to sneak in. He would be all over right from Tennessee because he's fast.
Yes.
He would be over Will Shipley because Will Shipley has lacrosse in his background. Yeah. He would go crazy over those type. He's going to check the backfield and see what you got.
Well, and Shipley gives you some return ability now. And I think that's really intriguing here. I wonder if that pushes him up the board a little bit, knowing that the kickoff is coming back into play this year.
You know, Red, he does have outstanding tools. And I'm going to admit, I am a huge Will Shipley fan. Having watched him in high school, played at Weddington and right outside of Charlotte, he is a terrific player. But he also was, and you won't be surprised when I tell you, he also was a ranked lacrosse recruit. Had legitimate offers from big-time schools to come and do lacrosse. And, you know, to think of that sport that Jim Brown was famous for playing in and Patrick Kearney played, and the balanced ball control, the physicality, all toughness, the fact that the quarterback is in there. It's interesting. Interesting for sure.
Okay. So there's an option in the fourth, you know, in the fifth, you know, again, we're in day three here. We're pick 148 as it currently stands. And again, I think a lot of times you see, man, teams move up 5-6 spots. They move down 10 spots in round. You know, once you get into the fourth, fifth round, you're accumulating extra picks. So you know, who knows where this pick ultimately ends up. But 148, I was thinking, if you want to look at a receiver as a potential Hunter Renfro type replacement in the slot, man, a guy like Malik Washington from UVA.
Yeah. Really good player.
You know, he's an option route specialist. I mean, absolutely 8 defenses up on the option route for UVA this last year after spending the first 4 years of his career in relative obscurity at Northwestern. And then boom, he's a 100 catch guy this year. You're like, holy smokes. Like, he found a fit. And I think that's in the slot, you know, kind of feeling his way through some of those routes.
Yeah, he did find a way to kind of make it happen. And we had the opportunity to watch him practice up close and personal at the East-West Shrine. And, well, I mean, he gave people the blues in terms of one-on-ones and what he was able to consistently win on and those things. He makes it very, very tough for people to kind of get around him, get their hands on him, disrupt his route. And he's he's solid as a pass catcher, just so consistent and reliable. I just love it. I love seeing him project as a slot receiver. If he slides to the 5th round, somebody's going to hand in the card. They're going to jump in, take him.
Yeah. And again, yeah, you could see him, you know, go up there in the 4th. I think he's still probably a day 3 pick, but he is a shorter guy. He is a smaller dude, but, you know, he's been small his whole life and ended up catching 100 balls last year. So that ended up working out pretty well for him. I think in the 6th round, we got pick 208. We'll just kind of clump these together. Picks 208, pick 223, pick 229. So 2 7th rounders, 1 6th rounder. I think somewhere in here, you could still go back to the well along the offensive line or defensive line. Guys I'm considering here, Christian Boyd, who is a non-combine invitee. Again, another dude who really shined in the week at the Shrine Bowl from Northern Iowa. Big physical interior disruptor at the defensive line spot. But one of my favorite ones that I'm going to have in here somewhere, I got to get a better sense of the range. Trevor Keegan, the offensive lineman from Michigan who played left guard for him, was born to be a Raider. Okay. He was born to play for Antonio Pierce, the Davis family, and the Raiders. Like, he was a culture changer, a program builder at Michigan. He came in when times were tough and helped build them into a national title game. He's a guy you want in a bar fight. Let's not get in any bar fights. He's a guy you want into, in a scrap, right? In a scrum, in there. And he's a dude that plays with edge. I love him. I love picks like that in the 6th, 7th round, continuing to fortify and provide depth up front on both sides.
Yeah. No. So here's what you're looking for in the 6th round. You're looking for a redeeming trait or quality that would give the player a chance to make the team and eventually become a contributor. And so you talked about his toughness, his physicality, how he got along and what the contributions were with the team that eventually went on to have a lot of success. You love those things. You also love the fact that that place has been producing NFL talent at those points, at those positions. So you begin to believe that the pedigree, that what he's learned is going to help him have a lot of success. If I'm throwing darts, I tend to want to throw darts on a couple people, guys who have traits, guys who have production and performance, and guys who have the pedigree. He checks off a lot of boxes when it comes to those traits.
Yeah. So look, I think any of those guys in the 6th, 7th round. And then, I wonder on the tight end spot, like Michael Mayer is a guy who kind of does a little bit of everything. 2nd round pick last year. I wonder if you look now in Luke Getsy's offense and you look to, a guy that's maybe a bit more of a traditional Y, but has some of the pass catching ability. And again, I come back to a guy like Tip Reiman. From Illinois, didn't catch hardly any balls, but you saw him move that sled at Illinois at combine in Indy.
I did. Very physical.
This dude knows how to play on the line of scrimmage.
He does know how to play the line of scrimmage, and we talked about like some of the rough, tough stuff that you need to get done. To me, it goes back to what APSS has taken over the job. He talked about being a line of scrimmage team. He talked about making them feel us. He said that in the past. He's talked about kind of being able to control the trenches and playing in an old school way. That starts up front. Tight end is a part of that. The way that he was able to dominate and move people off the ball, that is intriguing. It kind of fits the thing. And so even though you have Michael Mayer, I believe you never have too many tight ends, because tight ends not only help you in those 2 and 3 tight end sets, but these guys occupy you special teams. And so sometimes toughness is required to do some of the dirty work on teams.
I'd put him at the right tackle on punt. And because he's got speed to fly down there and cover, not just protect. So yeah, he's definitely, he might start for me day one on teams on the punt team. So, you got to think about that stuff on day three.
Because you got to put it together because, we always talk about in how can we get him a jersey?
Yes.
What tools does he have that will give him a chance to get a jersey on game day? How can he be active? Special teams might be a part of it. Being the second or third tight end might be a part of it. Yeah. But it's on you to sell yourself. Hey, the more that you can do, the better the chances of you being around.
Bang. And there you have it. So that's just a little sneak preview, a little taste of what you might see in the 7-round mock draft that's dropping on Raiders.com next week. That's some of the buzz, you know, that we've been hearing over the course of the last couple of weeks that'll really start to hit a fever pitch on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. I mean, because, hey, just think about it. It's not going to happen this year. We feel like we know who's going number one. But you remember, it didn't come out till maybe 4 or 5 hours before the draft that Baker Mayfield was going one to the Browns, you know, a few years ago. Remember, like stuff like that happens, man. It becomes a little bit more clear. More information comes out. I can't wait to see what pops draft week. And then obviously when we get together again, we will be back here for a post draft recap of everything the Raiders did immediately following the draft, probably Monday of that first week right after the draft. So we'll have maybe a day to let the dust settle, and then bang, we'll drop our instant kind of reactions and analysis on all the draft picks that the Raiders ended up with. Man, looking forward to it. Bucky, this is like the payoff, baby, right? This is it. Last word before we go out there and play on game day, which means, you know, letting the draft roll from Detroit on April 25th. But so looking forward to it, man. It's been a fun run though, hasn't it?
It has been a fun run. It's always a fun run. Looking forward to see the pieces and players that are added to the Silver Black. And look, I'm looking forward to talking about that and talking about more as it comes to putting this team together as this team hopes to make a playoff push this season.
And thanks to our team, of course, Silver and Black Productions, man, doing a great job putting this thing on the airwaves for us each and every week. It's been a lot of fun to kind of forecast how things have gone, how things will go down. Can't wait to be back here with you with some actual stone cold, hard and fast draft picks to talk about and see what they'll look like in silver and black. Until then, though, it's been a blast. Thanks for being with us. For Bucky Brooks, I am Rhett Lewis. We will catch you, Raider Nation, on the flip side.
Thank you for listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the Raiders Podcast Network wherever you get your podcasts.